Think about this. If you have other deductions, and if you buy another property in the year that you sell one property, you can actually use the losses from the cost seg on the new property to offset the gain from the sale of the other property. So even without a 1031 exchange, you're also able to defer the depreciation recapture tax as well.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further.
Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I am your host, Yona Weiss, and today we have a very special episode because there is no guest. It's just me, Yona, and we're going to be talking about cost segregation. Yeah, that's what I do. And you may have heard me on over 400 other podcasts that I've been a guest on, but on Weiss Advice, we've never actually discussed it. So I'm going to take some time today and answer all of the most frequently asked questions about cost segregation. And hopefully by the end of this podcast, you are going to have a pretty good knowledge and can answer these questions for anyone and see if it's best for you or for anyone that you know. So first of all, let's just start off by saying, what in the world is cost segregation? What is this weird word name, and why did the IRS give it such a weird name? The truth of the matter is, I'm not going to go into the history, but essentially it is called component depreciation. That's what it used to be called. But cost segregation is a tax strategy that allows real estate owners to lower their income tax liability by increasing deductions during the early years of ownership. So simply put, it's a cash flow mechanism. It's probably the best tool known in the IRS, in the tax code, for real estate investors to help them scale and grow their portfolio at a faster pace because you are essentially paying no income tax at the time of growing your portfolio. What could be better than that? So let's break down, what is a cost seg study and how does it actually work? So simply put, cost segregation is the process of an engineer breaking down the property into different components, into its literally every individual, from nails to studs to furniture to carpeting, etc. Everything in the building has different useful lives, has different values and timeframes that it depreciates. So before we get into cost segregation, we're going to take a step back and explain depreciation, because depreciation is a borrowed term. And it's the name of a tax deduction based on the principle that things go down in value as time goes on, right? But your property is actually not going down in value. I should preface by saying this does not apply to your primary residence. So that's the first frequently asked question that I get. This does not apply to your primary residence, but we're going to talk about everything under the sun, including bonus depreciation, including if you bought a property in a previous year, can you still do the cost seg? All these things, this raise a red flag with an audit. We're going to cover everything in this short podcast, so stick around. So back to cost segregation, depreciation. Cost seg is just an advanced form of depreciation. So we have to explain what depreciation is. As I mentioned, it's a borrowed term, and it's a name of a tax deduction that says when you buy a property, you're able to literally write off the entire value of that property from your income tax. Now, you can't write off the land itself, so land does not depreciate. You always have to subtract a certain amount depending on where the location, the type of property, the building, etc. It will be generally on average about 15% of the purchase price is going to go towards the land value. It can be a lot more in places like California or beachfront properties. It can be up to 50, 60% sometimes of the land value. And in other locations that the land value is very low, it can be as low as 1% or even less. But the average, like I said, is around 15%. So we're going to take off a certain amount for land. The rest you can literally write off, but over a long period of time. That's called depreciation. And for residential properties, including multifamily, it's over a 27.5-year period. And for commercial properties, over a 39-year period. So that's kind of arbitrary numbers, but allows you to literally write off the property. So let's say you bought a building for $1 million. If it's a commercial property or residential, it doesn't matter. We're going to subtract for land, which leaves you about $850,000 in our example of taking 15% off for land. That $850,000, if you divide that by 27.5, literally that means you're going to be taking about a $30,000 deduction every single year for 27.5 years. Now, that's great, especially if you're making money, you're making profit. However, there's a way with cost segregation to actually increase, double or triple or even more those deductions during the early years of ownership. And this is the process of cost segregation. So again, it's a long period of time to wait to take all those deductions, especially given the fact that you may not ever even use those deductions because you may not own the property for that long. So here's a method that you can literally just front load those deductions and take bigger tax write-offs. As many accountants that I've spoken to have said, is that the first thing you're looking at in tax planning is what deductions can I take? What deferrals can I do? How can I increase, right, profit in this year by reducing my tax liability in the current year? And yes, obviously you have to plan in advance and see, well, what's my tax liability? What's my tax rate planning to be next year or the coming years? But all said and done, real estate investing is a way to help offset that. So back to cost segregation, what is the process and how do we actually do this? Well, like I said, it's an engineering process. We break down the property and our company, Madison Specs, happens to be the biggest national company. We've done over 25,000 cost seg studies over the past 18 years across every asset class. So this can be done on a single family, it can be done on a multifamily, on commercial properties, right? Retail, office, industrial, self-storage, golf courses, you name it, any property whatsoever, besides, like I said, besides for your primary residence, including business properties, which business owners may not actually consider themselves real estate investors per se. But if you own a property or the business owns the property that you operate out of, or a doctor or a dentist may own their practice and may own the office building that they practice out of, or they lease some office spaces, that building can also be eligible for cost segregation. So again, we're breaking down the property. Instead of over a 27 and a half year or 39 year period, there are certain components in the property that actually depreciate over a 5 year schedule and others that depreciate over a 15 year schedule. And we're able to identify what those components are, accelerate the depreciation of those deductions, and essentially, like I said, take those deductions up front. So I'll give you a few examples of the 5 year and the 15 year property, and you can learn more. Like I said, I'm not going to go into too much detail on this podcast, basic frequently asked questions. So 5 year property includes anything that is non-structural that is inside your property, including furniture, fixtures, appliances, equipment of any kind, cabinets, countertops, carpeting, vinyl flooring, any type of that, even things like window treatments or millwork, things inside, lighting, can be depreciating on a 5 year schedule. And the value of that can be significant. For example, it can sometimes be 20 or 30% of the total value of the property is going into those 5 year components. Now, the 15 year is land improvements. Remember, I said land does not depreciate, but what's on top of the land does. And so concrete, right, pavement, landscaping, fencing, anything outside of the building that has value. And there is actually significant value. And in fact, there are certain properties, like I mentioned golf courses before, it's really interesting. It's almost all land improvements. Remember, the land does not depreciate and there's always going to be an allocation to that. But what's on top of the land does, and therefore you can literally write off on a golf course, up to 80% of the total purchase price sometimes is going into those land improvements. And mobile home parks and RV parks are the same because essentially you're not, there's no building, there's no structure. The structural components may include some utilities, right? If they're electrical and plumbing and all that kind of stuff, water, septic, all of that structural that has value to it going on a 27 and a half year schedule. But the remainder is essentially the land improvements, the concrete, right? The pads under each home, the landscaping, any roads, anything like that all goes into the 15 year. And again, mobile home parks, RV parks can be 50 to 80% of the purchase price, sometimes going to the faster depreciation. Whereas a huge difference with single families or multifamily would be more like 20 or 30% of the purchase price. Okay, so getting back to some of the most frequently asked questions that I get, when do I need to do this? Do I need to do this in the first year of ownership? Do I need to do this right away? Now, the great thing is we always run a free upfront analysis, a free estimate, so you can see what the potential tax savings are before you even hire us to do a cost segregation. But when you do it really depends on when you can benefit from those tax savings, when you can benefit from those deductions the most. It can be done in the first year, and a lot of people like to get it done as soon as they close on the property, get the cost seg done. And in fact, they'll get the estimate even while they have it under contract just to see what the potential tax savings are ahead of time. However, it does not need to be done in the first year. In fact, you can do this on a property that you've owned for many years. Okay, so as long as you filed taxes, any of the missed depreciation that you could have taken, you can actually catch up. And we do this not by amending any previous year's tax returns, which is great. You actually just have to file a form. It's called a 3115, a change of accounting method. And in doing so, you can catch up, like I said, make an adjustment and catch up all the missed depreciation that you take. Now, in generally, if you've owned a property for over 5 years, it's less beneficial because you've already taken a lot of depreciation. However, please reach out and see if it's going to fit your situation. Now, I mentioned before that this conservation thing, it's a borrowed term, right? And it has nothing to do with the actual age of the property, okay? You may have bought a property that was built in 1929. The depreciation is not intrinsic to the property. It's intrinsic to the property owner, which means every time the property changes hands, you get to start over that 27 and a half year schedule. You get to do a conservation study brand new. Now, it is somewhat relevant, the age of the building, that it does have to do a little bit with the value being placed in the structural components. However, like I said, the actual depreciation doesn't have to do with that. So we're going to be able to do it regardless of how long the property has been around for. Another really important question I get asked a lot is, well, how come my CPA is not already doing this? Isn't this a tax thing? Are you guys CPAs? Well, yes, we are CPAs, but we do not do any tax filing. Okay, so we have a team of CPAs, but we focus specifically on cost segregation. So you need to go to your CPA and see if this works out for you. Now, your CPA may or may not understand what cost seg is, and that's okay. You can educate them if you want, or you can try to find a real estate focused CPA who will understand this and will be able to apply it. However, your CPA is definitely not doing this on their own unless they work for one of the large accounting firms, you know, the Big Four, the Big Ten, who have engineers in-house and they do this. They do this by themselves. However, most 99% of accounting firms do not do cost segregation in-house. They may have a preferred partner like Madison Specs or another company that they'll use, and they will essentially just, you know, charge you an extra fee for handling that for you. But you can definitely do it on your own. And so, yes, your CPA is not taking care of this because the fact of the matter is most CPAs are not tax strategists. So they're not going to be telling you about all these different tax strategies. However, they're just filing your taxes. So go ahead and make sure to reach out. How long does this process actually take? Like I said, we run a free estimate. Usually takes about a day or so to turn around, but the full study can take about 6 weeks for us to do. When is the best time to do it? We covered, but the real question is, what are the tax benefits going to be? Like I said, that free estimate shows you ahead of time what the potential tax savings are, and they're conservative, which means we're always going to find more benefit once we do the final study. We're basing those estimates on the tens of thousands of properties and cost seg studies that we've already done. Now, does this flag me for an audit? Does this put me at risk for an audit if I do a conservation study? Simple answer, no, because this is actually the preferred method according to the IRS of depreciating your property. You're not supposed to put everything on a 27 and a half or 39 year schedule. The IRS actually says there are certain things to depreciate on a 5 year or 15 year schedule, and you're supposed to put them on those. However, since you need to hire a third party firm, a conservation company to do this, they don't require that. And to paraphrase Tom Wheelwright in his book, Tax Free Wealth, he says, why don't CPAs do this? And why don't people get this done? Or why doesn't the IRS require this? And he says, simply put, it has to do with the laziness of CPAs and their clients not to get it done, because essentially doing a conservation, the reason why they don't require it is it actually adds more revenue to the US Treasury by not telling you have to do this thing to take more deductions. So they're not going ahead and telling you to do that. Really important question is, well, I know I get this as huge benefits, can save me a lot of money on taxes. Can I just do this by myself? Now, there are some companies out there, I should mention Madison Specs does not employ this method, but there are some companies out there that do have like a DIY, a do-it-yourself software strategy, which costs significantly less than the engineering approach that we take, which is the highest form recognized by the IRS in terms of the cost segregation, the quality cost segregation study. Now, there are, like I said, some companies that do that, but it does put you at a little more risk of failing an audit if you ever are audited. So that's something really important to do. The IRS definitely prefers it and will not challenge it if you have a full engineering study. Who should be doing a cost seg? This is really probably the most important question, because yes, we talked about the benefits. Yes, we talked about how much money you can actually be saving, when you should be doing, et cetera. But who should be doing is probably the most important question. Now, anyone who's taxable, if you're not a nonprofit, if you're not a government entity, right, you can use a cost segregation study. However, how you apply those depreciation, those extra depreciation deductions is really going to depend person to person. Generally speaking, depreciation is considered a passive deduction, which means it can only be used to offset passive income. Well, what's passive income, Yona? Well, simply put, passive income, the IRS qualifies real estate or rental property as passive income. Unfortunately, stocks and things like that is not considered passive income according to the IRS. It's just rental property income, real estate income. Royalties can be included in that. Passive business, if you're invested in a business passively, that can be included as well. But the depreciation can only be used to offset those passive income. Now, unless there are a couple exceptions. Unless you're a real estate professional is the most famous exception, which means real estate professional status, or you may have seen this as REPS. Real estate professional status says that if you spend the majority of your time, meaning you don't have a W-2, you don't have another full-time job, and you're spending your time materially participating in running, managing, acquiring, brokering, right, operating, renovating, constructing, whatever you're doing in your real estate, you're essentially running your own rental properties. If you spend the majority of the time in the minimum of 750 hours, and this can be either you or your spouse. So only one of a couple needs to be this real estate professional status once you have that status. And this does not require like a licensing process or anything like that. It's literally just like a box you check, a line you write on your tax return saying, what's your occupation? Real estate professional. Once you do that, you're allowed to use the depreciation deductions to offset active income as well. So it's no longer limited to your passive income, which is huge. Otherwise, if you're not a real estate professional, conservation is not really going to be very beneficial because these extra deductions, you can take a huge amount of tax deductions, but you can't actually use them in the current year. There'll be passive losses. They will carry forward. You can use them in future years. You can also use them to offset passive gain from the sale of another real estate property. So there is benefit there regardless. However, it's not going to be a huge benefit compared to someone who's a real estate professional. The other main exception to the rule is the short-term rental loophole. Now, you may have heard of this before, and it's not really a loophole, but because it's directly in the tax code. However, it's called a loophole because maybe the rule wasn't written with this exact intention, because when it was written, short-term rentals like Airbnbs were not very popular. It didn't really happen. However, the rule states as follows. If the average stay of your property is less than 7 days, so it's more like a hotel. Obviously, this is a short-term rental. We understand it's Airbnbs nowadays. If the average stay is less than 7 days and you materially participate in running that rental, meaning you self-manage it, you're not having a third-party manager. And there are essentially several qualifications, but two are the most essential ones that you need to fulfill. Either you're spending 500 hours a year, right, on materially participating, running your property. And it can be across several properties as well. So if you own several Airbnbs, this can apply. However, the second rule is much more common and much more doable, especially in the first year of ownership, is 100 hours a year plus more time than anyone else. So you need to be spending more time than any other individual, but essentially 100 hours is not a lot of time throughout the year to qualify this. I should mention both on the real estate professional status, the 750 hours and the material participation for short-term rentals, you need to track those hours. And there are many ways you can track those hours, but they need to be done contemporaneous to when you're actually spending the time. And they need to be real. You can't say you spent 15 hours setting up changing the coffee filter or something like that, right? I mean, it has to be realistic. You have to show the hours that you're spending, and it has to be actually trackable as well. Now, going back to the short-term rental loophole, once you fulfill these two requirements, that one, the average stay is less than 7 days, and two, you're either spending 500 hours or 100 hours plus any time, more time than anyone else, you're able to use the deductions from CostSeg, the depreciation, to offset your active income. So this is a great strategy for someone who's a W-2, someone who has a high income and is looking to use conservation and looking to use really any, you know, tax strategy to lower their income tax liability, right? No one likes paying huge amounts of tax. The best strategy I've found and have seen literally hundreds of people use this strategy is self-managing your short-term rentals. And you may be asking, hey, I'm not in the hospitality business. I don't really know how to run a property. No, that may be true. And this may not be for you, but it is an option if you want to do it. There are definitely systems out there, courses out there you can take. I know the Short-Term Shop, we recently on their podcast, Luke Carl over there has a great kind of sessions and explanations of how to set up and self-manage your short-term rental. And you can do it pretty easily. I mean, once you spend the time setting it up, there's not a lot of time in actually running it throughout the year. So that's a really important thing. Going back to some other frequently asked questions of cost segregation, another really common question I get is, well, there's something called recapture tax, right? Well, what happens when I sell a property? Am I just going to pay back all the benefits that I'm getting? The answer is no. Okay. Simple answer. No, you are not paying back any benefits. That is simply put. Recapture tax does not mean you take depreciation, you pay it back. No, It means when you sell a property, you're going to be subject to a capital gain tax on the amount of profit that you made between the purchase price and the sale price. You're going to be taxed on that amount. That's called capital gain tax. Similarly, there's something called an unrealized gain, which is the recapture tax, meaning all the depreciation that you took, you're going to be taxed. You're subject to a tax on that amount. So if you took $100,000 of depreciation deductions over the course of ownership, you're going to be taxed on $100,000. It doesn't mean you're paying back $100,000. It means you're going to be taxed. Now, that tax is actually broken down into three different levels. I'm not going to go into complete detail here. I've done some posts on LinkedIn, on Twitter, breaking down those details. I've done other podcasts breaking down that. What are those three? But essentially, it's a certain portion of the depreciation is going to be taxed on a maximum 25% rate, which is most times, oftentimes, not all the time, but lower than your ordinary income tax rate. And then another portion of the depreciation is going to be taxed at whatever your ordinary income tax rate is. So the combined amount is certainly going to be less than had you just paid the tax up front. So it's always going to be beneficial to do the cost seg, unless, and I should just interject here before we explain a little more about the recapture, interject that if you're holding a property for less than 2 years, I don't generally recommend doing the cost segregation study because the recapture tax is going to come at a shorter pace. And the main benefit of cost seg is the time value of money, of using these depreciation deductions to offset your income tax this year. That's where the main benefit is going to be. However, if you're holding a property for more than 2 years, I highly recommend checking out cost segregation. Getting back to recapture tax, being subject to a tax is not the same thing as paying a tax. And this is really important. I want to just reiterate this because a lot of people get confused and think, oh, I have to pay it. I'm subject to the tax. No. Think about this. If you have other deductions and if you buy another property in the year that you sell one property, you can actually use the losses from the cost seg on the new property to offset the gain from the sale of the other property. So even without a 1031 exchange, which is another subject for another time, but a 1031 exchange essentially says you can sell one property and exchange it for another property. And by doing so, filling out some certain forms and following certain rules, you're able to defer any capital gain tax, you're also able to defer the depreciation recapture tax as well. However, by doing it the way I just explained, where you're not doing a 1031 exchange, you're just buying another property, having losses, having deductions from a new property to offset the gain from the sale of the previous property. So being subject to a tax is not the same as paying a tax. Those are the most frequently asked questions that I get. Another really common question is, how much does it actually cost? How much does it cost to get a cost segregation study done? It depends on the size and the type of property. We do not charge based on the percentage of savings, right? We do not charge based on, you know, how long it's going to take us to do. It's essentially a flat fee. And I'm going to share some costs right now, but this is obviously contingent to the time and date of the airing of this podcast. But simply put, we usually charge starting level at about $3,000 for smaller properties like a single family, and usually up to about $10,000 for much larger commercial properties. But the sweet spot, I'd say the average cost is about $5,000 to $6,000. Most type of commercial and multifamily property is going to fall in that window, which is, like I said, when we do the estimate, you can see ahead of time what those tax savings are. Any property purchased for over $200,000, it's a no-brainer, right? It's already the 10x, the value, the return on that investment. And that cost itself is a tax write-off. So it's a win, meaning you're paying $5,000 and you can write that off from your taxes as a business expense, and you're going to be saving tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars. And that's the amazing thing. If you buy a property for $200,000 or you buy a property for dollars, the cost of the cost seg is essentially going to be almost the same, right? For $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. However, the savings are going to be completely different because it is contingent on, obviously, like I said, it's not contingent, but it's proportionate to the purchase price. That's where the tax benefits are going to be. This has been a really fun episode. I hope you learned a lot about cost segregation. And if you do have any further questions, you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn, on Twitter, at my website, yonaweiss.com. You can go to madisonspecs.com, which is our company website. And please feel free to reach out with any questions. Even though this is the Weiss Advice Podcast, I'm not going to end this week with the final four because I've already answered those questions. In fact, twice. Once, if you scroll back to one of the first episodes over 3 years ago of Weiss Advice, I actually answered those questions in an episode called What Are Yona's Answers to the Final Four? And then more recently on episode number 300, where I was interviewed by Carl Sona, he asked me these four questions, and I think I gave the same answers, but they may have been slightly different. 3 years changes a lot. So go back and check out episode number 300 and go back and check out all of the previous episodes. I appreciate you all for listening and tuning in once again to Weiss Advice. I would be most grateful if you would take 1 minute out of your day and leave a rating and review on Apple, on Spotify, on wherever you listen to podcasts. It takes literally a minute and helps the podcast so much. And please share this on social media if you found any value from this podcast whatsoever. I really appreciate you. And remember, until next time, the best advice comes only when you ask.
Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn, send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.